subject is still the same. We'll have a presenter presenting on behalf of a company, an NGO, a sector, and would engage in questions and discussions, open the floor for everybody to engage. And then that will be the day until we conclude. We're hoping that we'll still be within our time in terms of presentations today. I'm just picking up that the circulated, oh, it's going to the back, okay. I was just trying to follow up on the other side. Okay, we should finish around 10 past 4 if we do delay, but I think let's make provision in case we take longer so that we can engage properly. Today we'll hear from NGOs. I think we've got NGOs, two NGOs that are going to speak, and then we'll hear from the mobile operators themselves in terms of their presentation. Yesterday afternoon, I got an indication that there are some colleagues who are meant to present today who are requesting to amend their presentations. That is Vodacom and Neotel. You would have received the presentation from Telkom. I hope members have copies by now, and colleagues, so that we can be able to engage with the presentation. All the documents that have been sources for the public hearings, including the submissions that we were not able to consider for presentation, because we have received submissions and we selected few for presentations today. So that will be part of, I just wanted to assure the colleagues who made those submissions, that will be incorporated in our report. It doesn't mean that if your submission was not selected for presentations during these 2 days, would not be considered. There are other submissions that have been made, and those are being considered as well for our final report. They are being incorporated. And that's why members were circulated, were sent these documents. We have been assured by our IT team of Parliament that these documents will be uploaded today on Parliament website. We'll do a follow-up and check, and hopefully if we can get exactly where to find them on the website, we'll definitely communicate before the end of today. But once we compile the reports, those who are familiar with the process of Parliament, we'll compile the final report and circulate it and send it to National Assembly to be published and sent to National Assembly for adoption. Once it adopted as well, it will be published as a document adopted by the Assembly based on what we have presented and our recommendation. So I thought that's important for me to clarify as we start, so that we are very clear in terms of what needs to happen. And I must say, members, that there's been quite a number of discussions around issues on this matter, and I hope we should be able to assist, because clearly out there, this matter, it's a matter that is very important, judging by the public interest that is there. Following from social media, following from mainline stream media, you can see it's a very, very important matter for South Africans. So I'm hoping that as well as we engage today and as South Africans today, as public reps, we should be able to help in finding a solution to this problem. I mean, I've been following quite a number of discussion around this, and you can clearly see that there's a serious concern out there around a number of issues on the cost to communicate. So it's our responsibility as public representatives to be able to give hope and to be able to provide direction and solutions and recommendations to the executive and the role players in terms of what needs to be done to assist in terms of the outcry that is in the public domain. So we're going to start our presentation The first presentation that we are receiving today is by Alliance for Affordable Internet. The lead person is Ms. Onika Nokhlanhla Makwakwa, who is the Web Foundation Communications Director. I think we'll give over to you, and then you can introduce the team that you're with, so that and then you can take us through your presentation. Thank you very much for responding to our call.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, guests, ladies and gentlemen, Sanibonani. My name is Onika Nonhlanhla Makwakwa. I am the Africa Regional Coordinator for the Alliance for Affordable Internet. I am joined here this morning by my colleague, Dylan Mann, who is the Director of Communications for the Web Foundation. The Alliance for Affordable Internet is the world's broadest technology sector alliance that is working to drive down the price of broadband by transforming policy and regulatory frameworks. Our members are comprised of public sector, private sector, civil society, and academia. Public sector includes national governments who are part of the alliance, as well as large corporations such as Google, Ericsson, and help me, Dylan, that are relevant for South Africa.
South African members include Research ICT Africa and Internet Solutions.
Yes, certainly. Thank you so much. Our focus is on conducting robust original research to underpin evidence-based policy. And our flagship output from that is the annual affordability report. Our newest edition of that is of March 2016, and we'll drill down a little deeper into South Africa specifically on this affordability report. We also conduct case studies on affordable internet-related issues for different countries, as well as thematic briefings, our more recent one being on zero rating and other mobile data plans. We provide direct support. In addition to research, we also provide direct support and action, mainly in Latin America, Asia, and in Africa, which is our largest area of engagement in Mozambique, Nigeria, Liberia, as well as Ghana. Our focus is really around aligning policy and regulatory good practices on policy and regulation. And our members actually endorse a set of 9 good practices that aim to ensure open competitive markets, policies and regulations needed in place to lower cost structure for the industry, as well as grounded in principles of internet freedom and fundamental rights of expression, assembly and association online. The Alliance is hosted by the World Wide Web Foundation, which was founded by Sir Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web. Sir Tim Berners-Lee gave us the web for free, with no royalties, no fee, completely free. It is now our duty to ensure that the transformative benefits of the web are experienced by all, and therefore we seek an open internet for all people all the time. Why does affordable internet matter for South Africa specifically? We are part of a global community and have commitments at the international, regional, and domestic obligations in terms of delivering affordable internet. The UN Sustainable Development Goals specifically speak to affordable access of the internet for least developed countries, with a target of no more than 5% of average monthly income as the target that they have placed for affordability of the internet. In addition, the AU's Agenda 2063 speaks for the first time to internet as a basic utility, putting it in the same framework as water, electricity, and other essential utilities such as sanitation and public transportation. In addition, our flagship document, South Africa Connect, which is South Africa's own broadband policy, speaks to universal connectivity by 2030. As we've heard this morning in the opening remarks by the chairperson, there is intense public demand for affordable internet. Earlier this year, we supported a Fast Africa campaign that focused around the values of fast, affordable, safe, transparent internet for Africa specifically. As well as over the past week, we have seen the public outcry organized through Data Must Fall campaign. And therefore, this is an opportune moment to have this conversation around the cost of affordable, around affordable internet specifically. We therefore recommend that government should continue to prioritize this issue and weave affordable and equal internet access targets and interventions across all ICTs and telecom policy priority areas.
Thank you, Anika. As Anika mentioned at the beginning, we are a global alliance and we tend to take an international and regional view on things, and so we certainly don't hold ourselves out as South African specialists. We know that you've heard evidence from many excellent organisations such as the CSIR, some interventions from the floor yesterday by Dr. Gilwald from Research ICT Africa, so we just wanted to be upfront and honest about that. We think that what we can certainly bring to the table though is a global overview and some comparisons with peer countries, and indeed set some global context and some big themes. Anika also mentioned earlier that we produce an affordability report each year, which looks in detail at 51 developing and emerging countries. At the heart of that is what we call the Affordability Drivers Index, and this year's index was the third time that we've produced that index. Now, this is a little different to some of the indices that you heard mentioned yesterday, in that it goes beyond the technical and beyond price, and it looks specifically at policy and regulatory guidelines and frameworks that are in place to help drive down the cost of internet in the countries in which we study. So we combine secondary data, important things like the number of internet servers per million population, electrification rates, etc. And we also have primary data, where in each country we have three experts who score the country across a range of questions aligned with A4AI's best practices. And those scores are then checked by both a regional reviewer and a subject matter expert. So all of those feed into a single number, and it is a slightly broad and slightly blunt instrument, but it does give us a very good idea of where countries are and how they stack up against each other in terms of their ability to drive prices down in future. And it's important also to note that we have done statistical correlation tests, and there is a strong link between performance on the Affordability Drivers Index and prices falling in particular countries. So the short version is, if you do well on the Affordability Drivers Index, your citizens are likely to enjoy affordable internet sooner in the future than other countries that do worse. So drilling down a little bit into how South Africa did last year, overall, we ranked 19 out of the 51 countries that we looked at. We ranked 6th in Africa, behind those countries that you see on the scoreboard in front of you. We did rise 4 places from 2014. The main reason for the jump in the scores was owing to better reported broadband speeds across the country. As you can see, though, that Affordability Drivers Index score there is out of 100. So there is significant room for improvement across the board. We're scoring at 46.4 out of 100. And when we drill deeper into the primary scores that we used, most of the time South Africa was scored between 3 to 6 out of 10 on the factors that our policy experts considered. So there's certainly scope for improvement in those scores too. All of the data is available on our website at afrai.org/affordability report, and one can actually drill into each of the individual questions and see the scores and the answers that were given. So I won't go into too much detail about that now, but I'll say that South Africa performed best on its scores for public access programs, and areas that were highlighted for work and improvement were around spectrum allocation and resource sharing. Now, I know the focus of this hearing is on specifically the cost to communicate, and we also said explicitly that the Affordability Drivers Index does not measure the actual costs in country. And Dr. Gilwald made some excellent interventions from the floor yesterday around the difficulty of staying current on those prices. And so I just wanted to share this chart from Research ICT Africa, which we accessed from their website yesterday. This is data collected in quarter two of 2016 on the cost for 1 gigabyte of data in selected African countries. They've surveyed 47. We've presented just a snapshot here. As you can see, the cheapest is Tanzania, followed by Egypt and Mozambique. Those prices are in dollars per gigabyte. Again, as we were in the Affordability Drivers Index, South Africa solidly in the middle of the table, falling behind Nigeria and Mozambique, leading the Gambia, who were quite close behind, and the good news is that we're a long, long way off the situation in South Sudan, where a gigabyte of data costs $90. Well, a little bit more than that. So our second recommendation is that there is definitely scope to use policy and regulation more effectively in order to deliver progress, and we would call on members of the committee to review the Affordability Drivers Index scores in detail and to consider how frameworks could be adapted.
Okay. Income inequality actually masks the true picture here. About 111 countries have actually met the UN affordability target of basic broadband priced at 5% or less average monthly income. And let's just note that this is actually based on half a gig of data, not a full gig. Yet only 9 countries meet this target for the bottom 20% of income earners in their countries, and none actually meet them for those who are living in poverty. In South Africa in particular, internet access is still unaffordable and income inequalities particularly mask the true picture here. Mobile broadband in South Africa costs 1.53% of the average national GNI per capita, which is about $6,000 in 2015. But these averages are not the true picture because over 60% of the population live on less than half of the GNI amount. So if you look at this table, you will actually see that the lowest income earners are spending up to 14% of their average income for half a gig of data. The second lowest are at about 7%. So we are far out of reach in terms of this UN target for 5% income as a cost of how much you are spending on basic broadband access. We therefore recommend that income inequality should specifically be considered and that any reporting in this area should break down population by income in order for us to be able to get a true picture. But also this calls for expanded focus on public access programs as well as investigating innovative solutions including community-owned networks.
Thank you, Annika. Another important issue which we wanted to bring to the table was the issue of women in the web and gender equality online. And I'm not sure if this was raised in discussions yesterday. I only caught the first half of the hearing yesterday and didn't hear it raised then. South Africa as a society is obviously deeply committed to gender equality. It's one of the cornerstones of, well, equality is one of the cornerstones of our constitution, and gender equality is something which we have always prioritized and been proud of. And there are many digital divides. There is not just a digital divide in access, there are divides in use and around income inequality, as Annika has just outlined. But one of the really worrying trends which we're seeing at the Web Foundation is a very wide and in some cases increasing gender digital divide on the web. Now, last year we did some studies across 10 developing countries and we focused on poor urban communities. So South Africa wasn't included in this study for various reasons, but we think that if we repeated the study here, the results may well be the same. But the really shocking top line finding was that women were about 50% less likely than men to use the internet in poor urban communities. And those are the communities where one would really expect people to be able to get online, to be able to use public access programs, to perhaps have a little bit more disposable income than poorer rural populations. And that simply wasn't the case. And the two key barriers that we saw were price. One of the two key barriers was price. The second was education, people simply saying, I don't know how to use the internet. But price was a key barrier, and it's important to note that this is very much tied into income inequality because, unfortunately, there is a gender wage gap too. So women are far more likely to earn less than men, and so this really compounds the effect of income inequality that we've seen mentioned earlier. And so this leads us to our fourth and final recommendation and an area that we would ask the committee to consider, which is that we really must prioritize gender equality online. We can start doing that by setting explicit gender targets and by measuring against those, making sure that they're time-bound. And as Annika mentioned above, the market will not solve all of the problems, we are still going to have a large group of people in society for whom even affordable internet, in inverted commas, is completely unaffordable. And a large number of those people are likely to be women and girls. So as we invest in public access programs, we must make sure that they target and prioritize women and girls too. So as a quick summary of our four recommendations, we would like to say we'd like to commend the committee for the time and effort and energy invested in these hearings, and we ask the government continues to prioritize this issue. We note that we believe there is scope to use policy more effectively to deliver progress and ask for reviews and progress there. We feel that income inequality is very, very important and that we shouldn't be fooled by top-line averages and targets which tell us that the internet is affordable for our people when a detailed look at the statistics and the public outcry that we see is telling us something very different. We must remain open to innovative solutions and we must mainstream gender policy and ensure that that is part of our thinking as we move forward with ICT policy. So we thank you for your time and consideration and look forward to the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. As I said, we will follow the procedure as of yesterday. Indeed, you just flagged something around women. I think yesterday I did ask, because we tried to find organizations that represent women to come and make a presentation. Unfortunately, we couldn't. So I'm glad that you raised the issue in your presentation. Just colleagues, those who would want to interact with the presentation. Honorable Shin. Zotetsi. Honorable Zotetsi. Honorable Mackenzie. Any other colleague? Okay. We close on that. Honorable Shin.
Thank you, Chair. Yesterday we had Research ICT Africa here, and they have worked out this issue of affordability. What is affordability? What is affordable? And obviously, it's different in Sandton to elsewhere. But RC Research ICT Africa worked out that affordability could be, it was measured at 22% of your average income. Is the cost of a gig of data, and you work out that it's somewhere between 6% and 19%. Can you explain the differences on how you worked out those prices? Because assumably they're both for South Africa. If you can explain that difference in what percentage of income is affordable, is a gig affordable? Then the other one. Some specific concrete steps that we should take. What should government be doing to bring down the cost of communications data in particular? What specific regulatory interventions would you suggest? What social interventions would you suggest could be done by the telecommunications operators, and I talk more about all of them here, not just the mobiles, and any other people. What concrete steps should we actually carry forward?
So that's it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's also thank the presenter for sharing with us their frustrations. The sentiments we also share, and also concerning the recommendation that is made already. Here on recommendations, you talk of considering income of inequality. I mean, consider income inequality specifically. On this one, I would love to know if we have ever engaged with the trade unions, because they are specialists in this area. We do legislation, of course, but they are the ones who really drive it harder than those who make policies, but for us to ensure that the policies are being effected. And on the issue of, it says women are about 50% less likely than men to use the internet in poor urban communities. The question here is, are the facilities there, are they visible, are they available in rural areas? And also considering the fact that men, most of them are not always in rural areas, that somewhere in urban areas, I mean, looking for job opportunities. And it also shows the inequalities between men and women. I'll answer.
Honourable Mackenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to know if India was included in your list of countries, because I think the data from India and the situation in India has many parallels with South Africa, given a history of colonization, poverty, inequality, social discrimination. I think there are lots of parallels that with this country and lots of examples that we can learn from. Then in terms of your survey sample on women using the internet, how big was that sample size, and over what period have you conducted your research? I particularly enjoyed your comment about the digital divide extending across various populations, including, of course, age. I believe older people are the biggest take-up on Facebook, for example. But thank you. Your presentation was very interesting.
Thank you very much, members. I think for myself, welcome the presentation to the colleagues here. Just on your recommendation, there's a concept there that just want to understand how you envisage it happening. I think it's your slides are not numbered. Around the recommendation, the last recommendations, where you speak about community-owned networks. In order to deal with the income inequalities. If you can just go into detail and explain that one. Now, I think, as I said, it's good that you tried to flag the issue of women and the role and how the gender digital divide needs to be, how we need to pay attention to that and mainly bring focus on the impact, because these are mothers that would, for example, be left with the kids at home, need to understand and have access to even some of the research. Some of them, it's girl children, that in terms of MDGs and SDGs, we're trying to ensure that their development and their growth goes ahead. So it's important for us to see within the sector that they are not left behind. I think one of the things that I would like you to elaborate further. It's in terms of your research. I noted that you took some of your data from ICT Africa. There's currently an issue that the cost in South Africa compared to other countries is high. And I'm looking at what you have put here. Prices per 1 gigabyte bundle as per research ICT. And I'm looking at, we're sitting at ranking number 16 in terms of South Africa. These are costs, if I'm correct. Now, in terms of where we, like for example, if we are to compare ourselves, let me take, comparing ourselves with Tanzania, which is number one, with their costs sitting where they are. What could be your analysis of the costs, the drivers of why would South Africa sit at number 16 as compared, for example, to Tanzania, which is almost looking affordable? If you can just elaborate, if that you've been able to analyze what you pulled out of the research ICT and what is your understanding of that. Thank you very much. Go ahead and respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We were just dividing out who would answer which of the the many important questions. I'm going to respond first to Honourable Member Shin. Just to say briefly that I think there are a number of ways to slice populations into income groups, we chose quintiles. So we broke the population up into five separate income groups of 20% each and analyzed affordability for each of those 20% buckets. I've not looked in detail at the Research ICT Africa report, but it may be that they used a smaller bucket at the end, so they may have looked at kind of the poorest 10%, for instance. But I wouldn't want to speculate in detail on that. But it certainly is very possible that for a large segment of the population, that 22% is believable. So, in terms of specific policy steps, again, I just want to say, because our efforts in country are focused on different nations and not on South Africa, I would feel that we would be overstepping the boundaries of our specific expertise by trying to give very detailed recommendations there. I would urge that in its deliberations, the committee looks at the best practices which have been produced by the Alliance for Affordable Internet, and I think that that's something that is quite remarkable because the Alliance has very different members. I mean, we have, you know, everyone from the governments of Nigeria, Ghana, Mozambique, to some of the big technology companies, to leading voices in academia and civil society like Research ICT Africa and the Internet Society, and they've all agreed that this particular set of policies is proven to help drive prices down and to help create that regulatory and policy environment which can move things down. And those do need to be tailored for each country. So when we engage in specific countries, the first thing we do is we bring together a multi-stakeholder coalition of civil society, of private sector, of government and regulatory bodies, and we try and identify what the key barriers are that are keeping prices high in each of those countries, and then work a plan of attack to try and drive each of those down. Now, because we're not operating on the ground in South Africa, we haven't done that detailed analysis and that stakeholder mapping. But I would suggest that that review of the good practices, as agreed by all of the members, and consultation with the interested groups in society would be a good practical first step.
Okay, just to add a little bit to that, I can give an example of one particular policy and regulation that we are working on in Mozambique specifically and Ghana, and that is infrastructure sharing, where we were able to bring together operators, the regulator, as well as civil society to discuss infrastructure sharing. And as such, in Mozambique, we've actually helped them write a new policy that will require operators to share infrastructure and set regulation for how that sharing should happen as a way of bringing down the cost. And that will actually be adopted within the next month or so in Mozambique. In Ghana, we are still doing an assessment of that issue. And infrastructure sharing is really important, especially when we're talking about rural areas where operators very often find it very difficult because of low population numbers. They find it very difficult to invest by themselves. So being able to bring in the tower operators or the, you know, cable operators to share the infrastructure and set regulation on how that will happen is a smart way of bringing the cost down. And I guess also if we look at the AU 2063 goal that begins to look at the internet as a basic utility, then it absolutely makes sense that we regulate it similar to how we regulate basic utilities. So when you dig in a new neighbor, in a new community to lay down the electricity pipes, to lay down water pipes, it's smart science to also lay down the fiber as well. So, you know, we can definitely share the outcomes from the studies we've done for Ghana and for Mozambique. And I think what's remarkable there is that both the private sector operators were engaged in that work as well as government and civil society.
Thank you. Just because I have it open on my screen in front of me, I'm going to turn to the Honourable Member's question on a comparison with India. And yes, that is a country that is included in our rankings. It's not one that we've analysed in detail for the purposes of this presentation, but I'd be glad to send you some documents and an overview of that. In short, though, South Africa does a little better than India on the Affordability Drivers Index. So India's score was 40.12 out of 100. South Africa's was 46.44. There are some areas which India is stronger in than us, which I can see, mainly around infrastructure. Yes, but also looking at the demographics, very different. Mobile broadband is marked as less affordable in GNI in India, but there's a much, much higher proportion of people living in poverty in India than we have in South Africa. So I would imagine that the challenges are fairly, in some ways similar and in other ways different. But we do have this comparison tool on the website. I can send that link across to the committee, and that should provide a useful ability to drill into all of the detail.
Great. With regards to the question on inequality and, you know, access to facilities, one of the areas that we've worked on from a policy point of view as well is looking at taxation within the sector. And because we are talking about the cost of data, we have not even begun to talk about the handheld devices themselves. And so when you look at also especially gender inequality and just income inequality, that also causes another level of unaffordability. So for example, in Ghana, we were able to work with the government to roll back a 20% device tax that is tacked onto handheld devices as a way to increase adoption. So that, you know, is also another area that we definitely should look at, is taxation within the sector as well in terms of affordability, and then also the handheld devices. What kind of additional taxes, you know, there is a campaign currently going on in Nigeria called on communication service tax, which seeks to add a 27th tax onto the sector. So the tendency is to also look at ICTs as a luxury sort of, and probably because that's how we started. But now I think we all agree that internet access is a basic need for our own transformation, you know, for lifting people out of poverty, for education, for health. And therefore, it's really important to look at comprehensive policies, comprehensively look at the policies within the sector that curtail full adoption and use, especially when we're looking at affordability for women in particular, as well as, you know, people who are living below our GNI levels. Community-owned networks, yes. Actually, this is a recommendation that we make in terms of just really looking at what are the opportunities for public access within this area, especially when we're talking about the people who are at the bottom of the income level. The UN guidelines are based on 5% target for half a gig. And actually, A4AI is supporting a much higher percentage goal than that. We think that 1 gig per month is a more reasonable target that we should have, and we would like to see a 2% target of income as opposed to a 5% target of income for half a gig. That actually begins to make the internet affordable to some of those people at that lower level bracket of income. And so we definitely would love to share some of the work we've done and discussions that we've had with both private sector, civil society and governments around a new target of 1 gigabyte of data at no more than 2% of average monthly income, because we think that that target actually is one that begins to get at affordability specifically at the lower level people. I think if we all agree that internet has become a basic need in terms of just our lives, but also in terms of being able to enjoy full democracy and participation, we have got to accept that it is now time for us to look at it as a basic right, and a basic access and affordability need to go with that basic right to ensure that every citizen can enjoy the transformative power of the internet. Otherwise, what happens online is that we replicate the inequities that already exist in our society, just basically get transferred to the online inequities, as we are seeing in gender at the moment, but also we are seeing it very clearly in terms of income inequalities. We have not worked specifically with trade unions, but I do believe that some of them may be involved in the coalitions as civil society actors within the countries where we have direct engagement, but that's definitely one group that we would love to be able to engage with around this. I mean, where we've seen a lot of interest and activities amongst the consumer organizations, as, you know, looking at this as a consumer right as well, and certainly, you know, looking at income inequities that make it unaffordable would actually be helpful as well. So thank you very much for that.
I have two other brief responses. There was a member, and apologies, I just noted down the question and I didn't note down which member it was, who asked about the methodology for the Women's Rights Online study. The study, we partnered with Ipsos Mori, the market research agency. It was carried out in 10 countries, which were Cameroon, Colombia, Egypt, India, Indonesia, Kenya, Mozambique, Nigeria, the Philippines, and Uganda. In each of those countries, Ipsos Mori interviewed 1,000 individuals face-to-face, 250 men and 750 women, with stratification to ensure the right population diversity. That was about it on the methodology. There are full details on the World Wide Web Foundation website, as well as the downloads of those studies too. And then I just wanted to turn to the chair's question about a detailed analysis of the pricing and why perhaps the internet and data, in particular mobile data, may be cheaper in certain countries such as Tanzania and Mozambique than it is in South Africa. I mean, I think that is a very, very complicated question, and indeed what is at the heart of this committee hearing here today. It is a multitude of factors, and I'm going to turn again to the policy and regulatory best practices there. It is clear that it's a combination of a healthy, thriving, competitive market which delivers value and affordable prices for consumers, in combination with state interventions that recognize that the market won't reach the poorest of the poor. There are need to pay attention to specific populations like women, like rural populations, because the internet is a right and not a privilege. But the situation in each country is very different. It would not be right for us to pretend that we knew exactly what the driver of that incredibly low price in Tanzania was compared to Mozambique. But over time, there are those certain factors which can be identified as good practices, and those are clearly listed in that good practices document.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I think we really appreciate the inputs and the light that you've shed with us. Definitely we appreciate that discussion. We'll move now to the next presentation by Right to Know Campaign. Right to Know Campaign to present. I think the team can move through so that we can start. It is led. I need to verify because we were given the name of Mikaridi. I see Carlo is here. You leading the team. Oh, is Mika here? Is not here. You are leading the delegation. Okay. So we'll ask the team to introduce themselves so that we can know who's here, because we were given somebody else here. Okay.
Okay, first of all, thank you very much for holding these hearings. My name is Noma Tabombayo. I'm the Right to Know Campaign Western Cape activist. I will introduce the delegation. With me, I have next to me Marie Hunter, who's a researcher from the National...
Just a bit slow.
Okay.
Yeah. I missed your name.
Okay. Noma Tabombayo. The activist from the Right to Know campaign. Okay, so next to me I have Marie Hunter, who is a researcher from the National Office of the Right to Know campaign. With us, right behind Marie, I have Dr. Carlos Rey, who's also a researcher with the University of the Western Cape. And then I have Vusisizwe Mpu, who's a poet, a performer, and a media freedom activist. We are happy about these hearings because the Rational Campaign believes that a high cost of data and airtime is a challenge to South Africans' freedom of expression and the right to communicate, especially for those who are living in poor conditions. The demand for an affordable data and airtime, as well as fast internet access for all South Africans, is important for our democracy. That's why we are here. So I'll hand over to Mary Hunter to give us more details on this.
Thank you, Chairperson. I believe that the committee is familiar with the Right to Know as an organization that is has been working on access to information and freedom of expression issues and media freedom issues in South Africa since its launch in 2010. The vision of the campaign, just briefly so you know that where we're coming from, is that we want to campaign and work towards a country and a world in which everyone enjoys the right to know, and that is to be free to communicate and to share and to impart ideas as equals. Now, we speak about the right to communicate in our submission and in our presentation, and of course if you look at the Bill of Rights you won't find that right written down, but obviously Constitution promotes various information rights such as access to information and freedom of expression, and these are crucial to democratic participation and to human dignity. Now, similar to our previous presentation where it speaks about internet access as a basic human right, for us the right to communicate is embedded in those communication rights, because without the means and infrastructure and access to communication facilities, you're not able to enjoy really to enjoy those rights meaningfully. So for us, there has never been greater potential, clearly, never been greater potential for people to enjoy those rights. With the potential that we see with technology, with massive advancements in technology, but the high cost of communication and is one of the factors that is undermining that potential. Since about 2013, we have been running a program of action under the banner of Vuluma Connection, which is about seeking to reduce the cost of communication and to improve access to communication. And really what this has been is a combination of research, of public messaging, and of campaigning to call on network operators to reduce their costs and improve their services, to urge ICASA and other stakeholders to regulate, to level the playing field and bring down costs, and also, of course, to provide meaningful alternatives to the current status quo, which is really choosing between the very big telecom operators. Now, this campaign is focused on voice, SMS, and data. We've heard a lot about data must fall, but, of course, we believe that the cost of all different communications should fall. And in the past 3 years, we've really seen that the costs have come down. The terms of the debate have really shifted in recent years, and I think that these hearings are a very welcome opportunity to continue that. Very briefly, just to outline what was in our submission, two publications that we've produced that I think are relevant. The one is a research paper on alternatives to privatized telecommunications, which unpacks some of the alternatives that have been referred to in the next few days, and my colleague Carlos will be speaking in more detail to some of those case studies, or one of those case studies in particular. And the second is the lived cost of communications, which was research that we commissioned and was conducted by a research unit at WITS, which really looks at when we talk about the cost of communications, what does it actually mean for poor and working class South Africans? Who really can't afford communication services. And now, given the useful research and the useful submissions that we've seen in the last few the last day of these hearings, we thought that the committee would welcome an opportunity to speak or to hear from some of the people who participated in that study and people who are really experiencing the lived cost of communications sort of day to day. And so with that, I would like to hand over to Vusi Sizwe to speak to that issue now, and then we'll continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade Mary, for the introduction, and also thanking Chairperson for the podium and the opportunity, also trying to send my greeting to all the members that are inside the house. And I won't waste any time. I'll try to be short as my size by opening with a Q&A to myself so that everyone would understand why having data and airtime is essential for me and my family and the community at large. And my answer would be easy for those that they are rich, but for the poor it will be something difficult, because the importance for having data and airtime for me, communication first, also safety, you know, because I can communicate easily with those that they are SAPS if I'm getting mad or having a challenge about safety, even on healthy wise. So by having data, I'm able to get that kind of service immediately. Also getting information out there and sharing information and learning more about what is happening in the world. And it's like practicing of freedom of expression. But I found it difficult because I always use 20 rand a time, and it makes it difficult even to finish the day because I need data to reach games like Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp. Without data, I can't, or internet, and other mediums of communication like Google, YouTube, and many more. So I found it difficult, especially uploading and downloading, and also applying online for the opportunities that are supposed to be there for one like me, because I'm unemployed and I'm living in the community where things are not the same as the suburbs. Also, there are promotions and competition that chow time and energy for one, because you get those at the midnight, you know, you get the competition at night and you look like a stalker when you phone a business person at 1 o'clock early in the morning Monday. I mean, even if you are texting a message to that person at that time, your response, it's obvious it will happen next day. And to close off, I believe, because there was other speakers that spoke, that we are going to digital world. Yes, I say that is true. But old school will never go away, because there are others that even still believe in old methods that are part and parcel of communication. So by those words, I would like to hand over to my fellow comrade, Comrade Norma, by saying thanks.
Okay, thank you. Just once more to speak more on my personal lived experience in using data and airtime, especially living in a community where you don't really have free access to Wi-Fi. Well, it is highly important for me as a mother, first of all, to be able to connect if I'm at work or I'm away from home, to connect with whoever is taking care of my child in order for me to be sure that the child is safe at home. So I think having affordable access to internet as well as airtime would better those chances. And also, you know, I often visit the Eastern Cape. I recently visited the area in Idujwa, and for me, the conditions there were even worse, especially with husbands that are working outside who moved from rural areas to urban areas for better chances in life, and the mothers that are left behind, the elders that are left behind who need to connect with their families, and they really go up to a point where they use their grant, their pension, you know, what was supposed to be sustainable for them to, in order for them to access basic needs such as bread or a daily, you know, plate of meal. And they use that grant and pension to be able to access, you know, communications, and it's very expensive. And for me, I found it very difficult to a point that you found out sometimes you're looking for a certain network airtime for instance, South Sea, and you will not get it in the area because it is not really in demand. They usually buy what is in demand. And you found out that they can maybe buy this airtime once a week. So if you miss your chance of buying airtime from someone who had to go far to get the airtime, the retailer, so for you, you might have also lost your chance of accessing airtime. So for me, it's very important that we have accessible and very affordable, you know, access to airtime and data in order for us to make sure that we have the same quality of someone who lives in an urban area and has access to Wi-Fi. And as a parent, I really find it helpful when my child comes home with a certain assignment that she has to do for school. And at school, the child is expected to give the same quality of research as the child who lives in an area with free Wi-Fi access. And with access to internet, be it by using data, my child can also access that information and be able to produce the same quality and the same level of a child who lives, for instance, in Sea Point. So I really feel that we really need to see this data bus flow happening because the cost currently is very high and people have to use their even grants to access. So I would really appreciate to have a free communication. Thank you.
So the context described by Noma in rural areas of the Eastern Cape is very similar to the one I've been experiencing in the more than 2 years that I've been living there. Not only understanding the cost to communicate in the region, but creating solutions to reducing it. Building upon local instances of self-provision for improving their living conditions, like collecting water from the rain in jojo tanks, or the energy from the sun with solar panels, I've been facilitating, with the support of the University of the Western Cape, that people in Mankosi, a rural community, make use of another natural resource widely available in rural areas, a spectrum, to provide themselves with communication services. So far, a telecommunications cooperative called Senseleni Networks, that as some of you may know means do it by yourselves in Sikosa, has been registered with the DTI and granted all the licenses by ICASA to provide communication services. With my training, local people have set up and are operating their own solar-powered telecommunication infrastructure using Wi-Fi and are providing themselves with cheaper communication services and charging phone facilities. As we speak, there is work in progress to connect the network to the fiber in Umtata and to provide internet and basic ICT training to both teachers and students in the local school and high school. The model created for Mankosi has been done in a way that could be easily replicated by any other community interested in doing the same. But the reduction in the cost to communicate is not the only benefit that this model brings. It is about keeping the expenditure on communications in the community to foster local economic development. It is about employment creation. It is about black empowerment. It is about increased digital entrepreneurial skills. It is about bringing hope to people that have been neglected that opportunity for a very long time. Just to give you an example, with the facilitation of another of my peers from UWC and the revenue from Senseleni Networks, 12 young members of the community obtained last year NSFAS grants and are currently enrolled in higher education institutions, students who otherwise would have been deemed to a way less hopeful future. So what I'm asking from you today, I'm asking you to enable an environment where poor people in this country do not have to choose in between eating and making a phone call to know how their loved ones are doing. Remember, they are currently spending 22% of their disposable income in communications. 22%. Using bottom-up approaches, like the one from Senseleni, the percentage of this income used for a similar set of services could be below 5%, even for the poorest of the population. So, how could you support this? Well, most people in rural areas do not use Wi-Fi-enabled devices like mine. They use GSM devices like most people in these areas do. And they will continue to do so for quite some time, The reasons are varied: the cost of the device, the lack of digital skills, the considerably less battery life that these devices have. Remember that they have to pay to keep their mobile phone charged. However, rural communities in South Africa have no option to self-provide themselves communication services in low-end phones. These phones make use of a spectrum that is owned nationally by a small number of providers, most of whom are not making use of it in rural areas because it's not economically viable for them to do so. Rural communities in other parts of the world, like in Mexico, have been granted this opportunity by the government, who has allocated a small part of this spectrum to provide social purpose communication services. In South Africa, this was done in the past via the Universal Service Access Licenses in 2005, but the results were not very positive. Many things have changed since then. Now, most of the population are using communication services in the mobile phones, unlike in 2005. Second, the cost of the technology has come considerably down. You can set up your own GSM private network for around 100,000 rands. Third, following the licensing scheme granted to Senseleni Network, there is no need to create a new type of license. It puts a fee to allocate a small part of the spectrum for social purpose operators, as small as 4 MHz, in a primary or a secondary basis. I understand this can take long to realize, that it will probably require consultations with existing spectrum owners, experimental licenses to prove no interference with primary users, etc. But it's a path worthwhile taking to address the affordability gap described so well yesterday. As said, with the current pricing from voice over IP providers and internet service providers, voice and data could be provided for less than 5% of the disposable income of the poorest people in South Africa. A very similar proposal in terms of dynamic or lease access to a spectrum was presented yesterday by CSIR. In the short term, promoting wholesale reselling agreements between mobile network operators and social purpose operators, what we know as mobile virtual network operators, would allow an almost immediate reduction of the cost to communicate. So far, this has been a market decision that even the only operator open to the idea, Cell C, has decided to ignore for rural areas. A similar proposal requesting the promotion of service-based competition in mobile phone services was presented yesterday by ISPA. In addition to this, and regardless of the technology, it has been proven elsewhere that access to seed funding to small operators and telecommunications cooperatives have a major impact towards universal affordable access. In South Africa, existing mechanisms such as the Universal Access and Service Funds or the Cooperative Incentive Scheme should be partially repurposed in this direction. These are not only part of the recommendation of the Right to Know campaign. As mentioned, they are recommendations coming from other research and industry bodies. Additionally, they have been endorsed by the majority of the civil society organizations engaged in cost to communicate issues, and therefore, we hope they are considered by this portfolio committee. This would enable the TTPS to give direction to ICASA to play a stronger role to create a level playing field that will make the right to know a reality in this country. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to the team for the presentation and engagement on the matter, and as well sharing personal stories of experiences of some of the colleagues. I'm going to request comments. I noted Honorable Mackenzie, Honorable Mugwene, Honorable Tsotetse, Honorable Shin, Honorable Ndungeni. No more hands anywhere else? Okay. Thank you very much in that order, members.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, comrades, for the presentation. Perhaps I'll call you Democrats instead because it seems to fit nicely. Just in terms of Dr. Ray Kay, 100,000 Rand for a network, a GSM network, because we did an oversight in rural Limpopo where a very simple network cost USAF 41 million rand to put up. So I just needed to confirm that 100,000 rand for a simple GSM network. How is your on that GSM network? How is your access to the internet? At what sort of speeds? If you can just comment on that, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is more of a comment. I'm really glad that we got to hear the right to know, because I think their presentation is at the core of why we're meeting here today. I think we've had very high-end discussions about policy and all sorts of things. This is a representation of how it affects people on the ground, and it's a long-standing problem. We've had this problem for a very long time now. I think about 3-4 years ago, the ICASA had called in the network operators to look at the prices, and we haven't gone anywhere really. We've spoken about decreases, but in really small volumes. But what we need to understand here is that this industry affects people at that level, at a level where people cannot make a phone call to the police, at the level where a student could get raped traveling to a place where they can get Wi-Fi. And this is why in 1955 the proposers of the Freedom Charter said that we need to control business in order to assist in the well-being of the people. And I think this is what business needs to understand. And it's the reason why we cannot have ICASA sitting and explaining to us why costs are high. They should be explaining to us how they're going to be lowered. And that's the purpose of this discussion here, because if we don't do that, the digital divide, as we know that knowledge is power, the digital divide is going to continue increasing that gap between the poor and the rich. And that is at the core of this discussion. It's about people's lives. And I thought we should just elevate the importance of that presentation. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Honorable Sotetsu.
I think all of us here share the same sentiments. You know, the more we listen to the presentations from the public, is the more you get emotional as human beings. And I think the step that we've taken as a committee to call for public hearings is evidence that we also advocate for affordable cost of this communication. As much as we are politicians, but we're also members of the public, so we really know the frustrations that people are going through. And also in government programs, for those who have time maybe to go through the documents, that one of the priorities of government is to develop rural areas. And I think the cost to communicate is the core of that development, because people have to interact with those who have the capacity to develop their areas. And we have taken a step here. We have this agency called ICASA to protect consumers from exploitation. But from what you are saying, you say ICASA to play a wrong regulatory under your further solutions, which I think is a recommendation that they must do more. So to us, it means ICASA is doing that role, but not enough to reduce the cost. And I wanted to say, what do you think we should do more? But it's also somehow an insensitive question. I mean, experiencing what you are telling us, and not only listening to you, but we live with people who are going through the same, situations that you have alluded to. And we say you are taking into consideration the proposals here or solutions or recommendations that you are requesting us to address them. And we say, as we have the right to know, and over and above, we have the right to know how mobile operators determine their prices. I think we have the right to know. And moving forward, I think together we'll really establish how do they determine their prices and come to a solution. Thank you.
I've noted your hand, Dr. Johnson. I'll come to Honorable Shin now.
Thank you, Jefferson. Yesterday we had presentations by ISPR and CSIR on these rural networks that have been established, self-established. And I asked ISPR specifically what intervention, what regulatory environment, what encouragement did these small community networks actually need from any sphere of government to continue or initiate these community networks. And the response was nothing. These guys are building these networks themselves. These are the budding entrepreneurs. Now, I'm wanting to know whether the right to know in any way is seeking to evangelize the ability of these communities to self-provide their networks, whether they're actually spreading that idea that they can do this. We have these examples here. Whether they actually have intention to set up any kind of program to mentor and support these community networks getting off the ground. Thank you.
Honorable Ndungeni.
Thanks, Chair. What sort of essential ICT services do you think the community need the most? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Dr. Johnson?
Yes, thanks, Right to Know, for making low-cost access very real. Appreciate the presentation. My question is about this GSM social purpose license. What I'd be interested to know is how low we can go. So to understand that, what is the model you see for, obviously, somebody with a phone in Zenzaledi running on a GSM social purpose license will still need to connect to other networks, and they can connect locally within the village. So I'm just trying to understand what sort of costs you think are possible, and perhaps tell us a bit about what it costs at the moment to make local calls and to call out to other networks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think mainly the appreciation of the presentation, as I said, in terms of the experiences that you are sharing and some of the issues that you are raising. Now, I think I echo the sentiments around the Zenzeleni networks in terms of just understanding more in what is being done there and almost around how we can be able to try and assist. And for me, there's further solutions that you are recommending. And especially you are saying to Parliament, how, when we talk, I know I'm just going to throw this, in terms of your understanding, what would be reasonable and what would be affordable communication, cost of communication? So that you assist us as we put together this. We are here to listen to all of you with a solution, with possible solutions or possible recommendations that you are seeing. And then you have highlighted amongst a study that finds poor South Africans spend 22% of their total income on communication. Maybe if you can share, I always love to have the sources so that we can verify this information, or if we want to go back, we can go and look at the data and analyze it and utilize it, because it would be difficult for us to utilize information that we have not verified in our reports. So I just want to be clear in terms of that. And definitely agree that we shouldn't have South African having to choose between making a call and bread. Now, in terms of what we heard yesterday as well from ICASA, there was an indication that you've started to see the reduction in terms of voice calls, and that's why they could say, if you look at the mobile network operators, you are not able to see them generate, making more income out of that. Now, are you saying even on calls, voice calls, I mean, the domination of other people have been saying, we are now concerned about data costs. I just want to verify from you, are you saying even voice calls, we still have to look at their cost and their pricing? Just to verify on that one, and if you can clarify that for me. Thank you very much. I think we'll give it to you so that you can respond.
Thank you very much for all the questions, and Honorable Mackenzie, is that your name? The prices of GSM base stations have gone considerably down. The range of the network that you are trying to cover also plays a role on that. I don't know those 41 million runs, how many people and extension of area we're trying to cover. It really depends. It really depends as well on the power that that base station is allowed to transmit as to go further. So it's very difficult to give you an answer with, depending on those limits of transmitting power, there are, with 100,000 runs, you could cover more than 10 square kilometers. Sorry,
we don't have a private conversation there.
Sorry, that was the first question. The second question, at the moment in Mankosi, we will receive a grant from the Internet Society, so we are upgrading the whole infrastructure. Before, and because we couldn't get cheaper pricing because from any of the backhaul providers, that's another conversation that we could have. Now we've got some funding to use some data and to the fiber thing. We are in the process of negotiating pricing with the different providers, like probably Tenet will provide internet to the school and the high school, and another provider will, so it's kind of complex, but it would be fiber in between 1 and 3 megabit per second, one-on-one, I would say. With relation to whether we are here to evangelize about community networks or not, I think it's becoming more clear that there are some parts of the market, some segments of the market, and not only market, of the population and the people, that are not covered and are not of the interest of big telecommunication companies, especially in a country like South Africa with such a big inequality in income. I think big companies make most of the money with the people that have big money, or medium money, I would say, but people below 600 rands a month, I don't think they are under interest to get any profit out of them. So there could be solutions like community networks, as for instance, the Alliance for Affordable Internet and other global platform, and including the SA Connect plan. In the recommendations from the National Broadband Plan, community networks are recommended for places where the market is not reaching. So it's not me evangelizing about anything. It's the National Broadband Plan that I believe you might have been part of or involved in recommending what is inside of it. And mentoring for creation of the community networks, I think there are programs already in place for entrepreneurship, for leadership, for skills that could be used for mentoring people to create this. I'm just saying that I've been through the process of establishing an alternative, and I think this alternative is viable for places where the market is not reaching. It's up to the house to decide whether this is a viable alternative or not. I'm here just to mention my experience. As for Dr. Johnson's question about how the model, how cheap it can go, with the current prices that we have received under a non-disclosure agreement from voice over IP providers, at the moment I'm using the pricing from Research ICT Africa, the 30 calls basket is sitting at 90 rands for 30 calls with Vodacom and MTN, that are mainly the providers for the cheaper price plan of Vodacom and MTN in the country, is sitting at 90 rands for these 30 calls. With the pricing that we have received from the voice over IP providers, we could go to 10 rands. So that's a very big reduction. And that's for the breakout calls. Remember, well, you know very well, but inside the network, because it's a private network, the call could be for free. And most of half of the calls that people do are inside of the community. As for the 22% of the disposable income, Honorable Chair,
sort out that something relating to the next slide,
okay,
to the next presentation. Sorry about that.
So I wanted to answer about the 22% of their disposable income that you requested. That comes from three studies, two of them included in my PhD. One was a study in Mancosi, like an stratified sample study that has been published in a peer-reviewed journal, that takes into account how much money people in Mancosi spend. So it takes into account the reported income and it takes into account the reported expenditure, and that was conducted in January 2013. In January 2014, we conducted another survey and there was no significant difference. So it was the same price in 2013. For the submission that is related to this one, we did an exercise in this particular community. But in an exercise that we did with Research ICT Africa for another submission that we did, that is the one I'm mentioning, that is endorsed by all the civil society organizations, in that one we took into account the income at the bottom of the pyramid in 2012, and we applied the increase on the inflation up to 2016, and we took into account the prices of the cheapest price plan from Vodacom and MTN in 2016, and still 22% of their disposable income for those at the bottom of the pyramid applies today, 2016. Although that's something that Noma mentioned somehow, that is those cheapest price plan, we keep on saying that prices have come down, but in rural areas, those reductions of the MTRs are not coming, are not arriving, because of what she says. Most of the companies that are making use of that, Cell C and Telkom, are not available in rural areas. The people cannot buy that airtime. So people are using other price plans that are not the cheapest. Most of them are using other price plans like dynamic pricing that is considerably more expensive than the cheapest flat rate reported by Research ICT Africa. So I would dare to say that the percentage of disposable income is even more than that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, chairperson. I just wanted to speak quickly to one question raised by the honourable member on my left about the role that we feel ICASA has to play, because we do say in our submission that we believe ICASA has an even stronger role to play in ensuring that the cost of communication come down and ensuring that there's a level playing field. Obviously, we recognise the very important role that ICASA has played until now. But the member's correct in picking up that we believe that ICASA must play a stronger role. So, as an example, the cutting of the termination rate, the interconnect fees, was a very successful intervention. We think that this has been very good for the cost of communication. But as members will remember, during that process, it was quite a chaotic process. It took a long time to achieve research and analysis that ICASA had to produce was delayed, and of course ICASA was revealed to be, let me correct myself, one of the issues that came up is that the network operators were not providing information that ICASA needed to make its recommendations. As I recall, that led to a delay of several months. And so it really showed a situation where ICASA, the regulator, did not seem to be able to get the kinds of responses that they need, that they really deserve to get out of the network operators. So we would like to see ICASA playing a stronger role, firstly in reducing the cost of communication, second in leveling the playing field and ensuring there's more competition within the private sector, but also to see that these alternatives and these very important community-run alternatives are also viable and supported by ICASA. And of course, Parliament will guide them there. And so this is just our appeal to the committee to continue ensuring that process is working. But finally, just to touch on a comment that was made by the member who's just returned, and thank you very much for your response to our submission. And I'm glad that this submission has been useful, because we know that the network operators will be appearing before the committee now. And we know that you will hear that business is tough and that the cost of communications is much as low as it can go, and that this is ultimately a business. And we just hope that you do remember the voices of ordinary users and ordinary South Africans who are really struggling with the cost of communication. And you remember those voices when you make the findings that I hope that you will make. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim. I've got a hand at the back to Dr. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to clear up, sorry, Carlos, 90 rand for 30 calls. Is that 30 one-minute calls? Just want to clear that up quickly. Thanks.
That's using the OECD basket for 30 calls. Is 51 minutes in total. According to the numbers that I got in Mancosi in 2013 that I used in my PhD, they speak as up to 77 minutes a month. So it's not that they are spending 22% of their disposable income calling crazy. It's very little, very, very little.
Okay, just to touch base, I also wanted to kind of answer the question on what essential ICT services would be of a basic need. Well, for me, it would be very, you know, good if we could have, could be able to call the local hospital, the local schools, the local police stations on a free basis. And I'm not talking about the 10111s, the 107 that would take you the whole day before you get help, but I mean the direct landline of the police station in the area for you to be able to call for free, or even if it's the schools and the hospitals, the basic needs, the things that we need every day. And also the so-called Wi-Fi broadbands that are out there in the area that we don't know how to access. If it could be clear, how do students access those Wi-Fi broadband so that they can be able to use free access to Wi-Fi?
Thank you very much. I'm not so sure if there's still anything that you wanted to respond to. You've responded to all of them, yeah. Thank you very much to the team from Right to Know campaign. for your presentation and the inputs and the responses to the questions. We really appreciate and for responding to our call to come and make a submission. We'll move to the next presentation led by presentation by Vodacom, led by Professor Andrew Baranson. I think the presentation is, I'll just go and note that there's one slide change to what members will have, and I'll appeal to the presenter just to flag that slide when they get to it. I hope we've got the right presentation on. We're trying to sort it out with the team. So you can, Prof. Baranson, you can introduce the team and just proceed with your presentation.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and to the Honourable Members of Parliament and to everyone present. I think just by way of introduction, I just wanted to reflect on, I think, two issues in the presentations of yesterday, just by way of introduction. I think the first matter was that we concur with ICASA, especially insofar as they address the issue of benchmarking, that the particular benchmarks that was used yesterday was incomplete. So we concur with the assessment, the acknowledgement that it was incomplete. And we also concurred with, I think, Professor Alison Gilwood's the discussion that internationally some of the benchmarks was problematic. And we said that up front because one of our team members will speak to the issues of benchmarking and how it may assist policymakers and regulators sort of formulate and adopt informed policy. I think the other observation yesterday was really the whole debate around the importance of affordable pricing. Now, in the as an important ingredient for what it is we are all hoping to achieve, we really just want to add to that, and I think it was also presented by others yesterday, the whole issue of it is really one ingredient to which we need to add, I think, two others, and I think it will become clear in the Vodacom presentation. So the other ingredient really is the importance of reach and access that needs to be universal, as well as a network in which the quality needs to be world-class. So really, the challenge, I guess, it was raised yesterday, we just want to concur with it today as well, is just the ability to manage the tension between those three matters, those three ingredients, is quite important. So it's price with regard to access, price with regard to quality. And I think that would be an important feature of the Vodacom presentation this morning. I think there's probably going to be three key takeaways, and the team will unpack each of these. We are going to share what those practical efforts are that Vodacom has undertaken to lower prices, to extend the network, to improve its quality. So So there's a concerted effort to unpack and explain that. In an environment that requires extensive investment in network infrastructure. And so actually a lot of the Vodacom story is invest, invest, invest. 8.7 billion this year and 26 billion over the last 3 years. So that will also become clear. And I think the last key takeaway is it is being undertaken in an environment that is characterized by spectrum scarcity. And so again, it's the whole clarion call for assigning high demand spectrum that will allow operators to lower its cost to provide infrastructure services and improve coverage and capacity for its end users. And so those are really, by way of introduction, the key comments. We have two key presenters, and then hopefully the rest of the panel will respond to questions. I'm going to ask that they sort of introduce themselves as they present, so we can just save time in that regard. So if I can just hand over to Henny.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Jay. Henny Jacobs, Regulatory Affairs, Vodacom. Slide 2. In 2012 and 2014, Vodacom had the opportunity to present to this committee on the cost to communicate. At these forums, Vodacom expressed its commitment to reduce the cost to communicate. And in 2014, we presented our strategy to achieve this, that is price transformation. This strategy is still intact, and today we will share the significant progress we made since 2014. With regards to a quick overview of this strategy, first, looking at the customer, our aim is to offer the best network, best value, and best service to our customers. So when it comes to investing in our network, we have and continue to invest substantially in our network to create more capacity, expand high-speed data reach, and offer a world-class experience. When it comes to providing the best service, it's about unmatched customer experience, and we've got various programs that we will talk about. Transforming prices to offer best value, that's to have customer-focused offers and also lower prices that will provide better value. And we've also aimed to simplify prices. With regards to growth, our aim is to grow data adoption, and that we do by having the best network, ensuring that we have a device that's fit for customer-specific needs, and also offering affordable value across all segments. Then, when it comes to cost control, devaluation of the rand, increase in energy prices, and the fact that we had to extend our network created upward pressure in terms of costs. For that reason, we had to find smart ways in order to contain costs. If you look at Vodacom's radio network today, all our sites are single RAN, which enables the combination of all technologies, which assists with cost saving. From a transmission perspective, in terms of connecting our base stations to the core of the network, we are currently on roughly 89% of our sites having self-provided transmission. That is at a significant lower cost to Vodacom compared to leasing transmission from Telkom. And where possible, we actively share passive elements of our network in order to further reduce cost. And we've also realized material savings in energy costs through innovative technologies that reduce energy consumption. Moving on to the next slide. So if we just drill down in a bit more detail on those components, looking at investment, we've accelerated capital investment to create wider reach, faster speeds, and improved quality. Our capital investment this year was 8.7 billion. Over the last 3 years, approximately 26 billion. which has enabled us to further expand 2G, 3G and LTE coverage, to increase data speeds, and to reduce drop call rates. So we've increased our 3G sites to 10,600. Our 4G sites are currently at 6,000. We are now reaching more customers in remote and previously underserviced areas with high-speed data coverage. We've extended our 3G population coverage to 98.9%, and LTE coverage currently sits at 58%. We agree with the CSIR that there is no access gap, a massive success. With regards to our investment in transmission, and we've, as I've mentioned, we currently have 89% of base stations connected via Vodacom's own transmission network. And we continue to implement newer, faster, and more efficient technologies. We've implemented LTE Advanced with peak speeds exceeding 200 megabits per second, but unfortunately, there are limitations given spectrum constraints. Our network is also more resilient. Next slide. So just again, in terms of population coverage, 3G is sitting at 98.9% and 4G at 58%. Our drop call rate is currently at 0.41%, which is not only the best in South Africa, but is also below the target for that Vodacom sets for its operating companies. Through our investment in infrastructure, we've retained our top position in South Africa. We came first in the My Broadband download speed test. We were first to launch mobile LTE Advanced. And we also first in the Vodafone group with regards to performance testing. And then just looking at the graph at the bottom right, according to our analysis, South Africa is widening the gap in terms of download speeds, which is even more remarkable considering that that's offered to 99% of the population. So just in terms of the graph on the far left, we've got South Africa download speeds observed, and we've compared it with some of the African markets that we also operate in, and it's clear that, that South Africa is taking the lead in terms of quality at least. Next slide.
Thank you, Annie. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Zunaid Mohammed, Vodacom Commercial. Our data strategy consists of four pillars. The first one is internet everywhere, and that's investing into the network to ensure we have coverage and quality across the country. The second one is capability, and this is ensuring that consumers have the right devices to access the internet, that is smartphones. The third one is affordability, and that's creating value-based offers for customers. And the last one is the reason to consume, and that's providing access to content that is relevant and meets customers' requirements. All of these have resulted in us seeing the increase in customers, in both active customers, active smart devices, and 4G customers. From a device sales perspective, we've seen a 22% increase of the sales of smartphones in the last year. In terms of data utilization, we've seen an increase of 86% in terms of the number of bundles purchased. And this has resulted in data traffic actually growing 68% faster than data revenue. From a 4G perspective, in this last year, we've practically doubled the 4G coverage. Next slide, please. This slide actually takes us through and measures the retail device price of entry-level smartphones over the last 5 years. And at the same time, it's mapped against the Forex, or the currency exchange rate to the dollar. As we can see, from just before 2012 to 2016, the dollar's almost doubled. But the retail price for smartphones, we've actually invested heavily to try and bring that down, and that's come down from $9.99 to $3.99. So that's a 60% decrease in the last 5 years. And we've actually seen the results of that if you look at the picture below. In the last year alone, or in the last 2 years alone, we've actually doubled the number of active smartphones in the network. Next slide, please. In terms of simplifying prices and transforming prices, we've launched new pricing that is a lot more transparent and simplified. Our base prepaid tariff is now called Power Bonus, and that offers a flat rate for both voice and data. In addition, we have added a recharge bonus, which gives customers 50% more value every time they recharge. We also have more tariffs that have been developed to suit customers' needs, and these range from a no-frills 79 cents per minute per second billing tariff to the dynamic discounting tariff, which offers up to 100% discount based on network capacity. Just for You is a value-based proposition that we created for convenience and offers customers personalized, tailor-made offers that's based on their behavior and their needs. Next slide, please. Data bundles, affordable prepaid data bundles. This graph has been put in to illustrate the progress we have made in providing customers with choice in terms of bundle purchase. We've actually created a range of new bundles that are available from hourly bite-sized to monthly big bundles, and these range from 10 megabytes to up to 20 gig. And the uptake of this has actually resulted in an 86% increase in sales, but it's also allowed us to drop the effective price of data by over 50% in the last 3 years. Next slide. From a voice perspective, our innovative bundle strategy has allowed us to increase bundle sales to over 1 billion bundles in 2016. And this has resulted in us being able to drop effective pricing on voice by over 48% in the last 3 years. Next slide. From a contract pricing transformation perspective, we're showing significant progress in our transformation strategy. And basically what we've done is we've moved away from legacy voice-only tariffs to provide an integrated voice, data, and SMS plans. We've reached over 90% on the contract side and 88% on the hybrid side. And this has all resulted in customers getting significantly more value in bundle, and it's resulted in the revenue contribution shifting towards in bundle as well. On the fixed side, there's actually been massive gains in pricing transformation on the fixed side, and as you can see, we've seen pricing drop approximately 90% in the last 6 years. From a transparency perspective, we've invested heavily in people, process and technology to ensure customers get a better, transparent experience irrespective of the channel. Customers are able to have the same experience when accessing Vodacom through the Vodacom app, USSD, calling a call center, or even visiting a retail store. This includes being able to view balance, purchasing bundles, as well as a range of self-service options. This is probably the biggest thing we can talk about. Vodacom has made massive strides in recent times in empowering all South Africans to have access to basic services like education, health, and jobs. Probably the most prime example of this is Vodacom eSchool portal. eSchool provides caps-aligned content for grade 4 to 12, including lessons, videos, assignments, and progress reports. This is zero-rated, which means that it's absolutely free to all customers, all Vodacom customers. And we've already seen success in this area with over 150,000 learners registered and accessing for free. We're also aware of the financial conundrum that job seekers face, and as such have launched Next Level Careers. And this is aimed at job seekers who can search for jobs and upload their CVs absolutely free. There's also additional sites from a health perspective, and we're continuously working to ensure that basic services remain free for all South Africans. This is just an example of the Vodacom eSchool.